Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews the CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now here's your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Linda Cureton, the former NASA Chief Information Officer and current CEO and founder of Muse Technologies. Linda recently retired from NASA, so this is kind of an exit interview. Linda, you've been a guest on my show several times over the years. I really appreciate all your time, all your energy, and now we're going to talk about why you decided to retire. So welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jason.
So let's do some basics. You retired roughly a couple weeks ago now. Why did you decide to retire now versus a month ago versus 6 months from now? What was the deciding factor?
Well, broadly, I had considered what I would do, you know, at this point in time. I looked at the presidential election as marking a point of inflection career-wise to determine whether or not I was going to go forward, go to another federal agency as a CIO, or retire, or just do something different. And so, and one of the reasons why I thought that was because I'd been through a presidential transition before, and I didn't really relish going through it again. And because I liked my bosses, but I never know what's going to happen during a transition. And so it didn't end up being the transition that I thought, at least at that time, but still there is a possibility that there could be a change in administration at NASA. But I had made the career plan to consider what to do, and I started thinking about it about in the late summer, something like that. And I did get some analysis as far as, you know, what are the pros and cons of retiring now from a financial perspective, and I determined that it was feasible to do. And once I'd made the choice of not staying in government, that retiring and then doing something out of government seemed like a really good idea to do, both from a fiscal perspective and from a wanting to do more things perspective. I wanted to write another book. I wanted a follow-on to the Leadership Muse. And to be able to do that as a federal executive had so many restrictions, I just didn't want to start that if I was not going to be an executive in the government again. I can't really market the book. I wasn't free to do a lot of things that I really felt I needed to do to market the book and to do another one before I really was free, before I had the freedom to do it, just didn't seem like a great idea. And I really had the burning desire to start working on a sequel to the book. And those things kind of added up retiring. So then once I said, okay, I'm going to retire, then what? Am I going to be a CIO someplace else? Am I going to do the usual beltway stuff and work for an integrator or work for another government contractor? And I did consider starting my own company. And I talked to a small set of trusted souls, and I pretty much knew that starting my own company was not high on my list to do because it was too risky. I wasn't sure I could do it. I wasn't sure I could financially tolerate the risk, and I wasn't sure that I'd be able to be successful or even get business or get contracts or any of that stuff. And so as I thought about what are the things that I really wanted to do in life that weren't financial, that were more of a self-actualizing kind of thing, I thought about my goals of wanting to do the work that I love, to work with people I love, and just have a passion about what I'm doing. And it came back to starting my own company and doing the things that I love to do. And I like problem solving. I like transformation. And I like a lot of the things that I did in my career, and that I could do this and show others how to do it and enjoy my life much better than, you know, some of those bad days I have as a government CIO. And the risk conversation, a lot of people say, oh, my God, the, you know, sequestration, the economy's bad. Why do you want to do it now? It's just, oh, no, don't do it. And I started thinking about the fact that usually people want to do things like this when the economy is good, and then there's, you know, all this competition, and And then the need for transformation itself, which is what I specialize in here, may not be as strong if the economy was strong and things are going very well. So it seemed to me that just like when the stock market is going very poorly, it's time to buy and not time to sell. And so I wanted to buy into this market now while I think people really need it and go against the grain and go in and take a risk where maybe a lot of people wouldn't take the risk. And here I am.
Very nice. Now, I want to definitely get into what Muse Technologies is and what it does. But before I do that, let me just get a little more about your background. You were NASA's CIO for how long? And you were in the government for about, what, 34 years, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, a little bit under 34 years. And I was NASA's CIO for about 3.5 years.
And before that, you also had worked where? I think ATF, if I remember that correctly, and some other places?
Yeah, I was the CIO at Goddard Space Flight Center for about 4 years. And then before that, I was deputy CIO and deputy assistant director of science and technology at ATF. And then I did a spell at Department of Energy as associate. I was associate CIO. I was acting CIO. And I was acting deputy CIO. Prior to that, I was at Justice Management Division at their data centers. And that's where I cut my technical teeth and moved up, and I left Department of Justice as a GS-15 before I got my senior executive position at Department of Energy.
All right, well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will talk more about Muse Technologies. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Linda Cureton, the former, now retired, NASA Chief Information Officer and CEO and founder of Muse Technologies.
This is a test to find out if you know it all when it comes to children. Name one of the leading killers of U.S. children age 1 to 13. What's the best way to protect children in a car crash? At what age and size should a child start using a booster seat?
Don't assume you know it all when it comes to car seats for your child. Go to safercar.gov/the right seat and know for sure. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Linda Cureton, the former NASA Chief Information Officer, recently retired, I should say, and CEO and founder of Muse Technologies. Now, Linda, before break, you're talking about the book on leadership. Let's talk about how that translated into now your new business venture. You're called Muse Technologies. What is it and how does it work? And what's your goals around Muse Technologies?
One of the tenets of the book is that we need 21st century hero leaders. And the problems that we're facing now and are just seemingly impossible to do. And it requires a superhero leader in order to do these things. Today's hero, I think, draws on perhaps something supernatural, that inspiration that's deep inside in order to do these impossible things, to have courage and vision and charisma and all those things to gain followers. And the principles that I believe, I think that that's very important. For Muse Technologies, we will specialize in IT transformation. So in order to lead an IT transformation, you do need a hero leader at the helm to do that. So one of the lines of business, we'll have three, and one of them is about that individual leadership. How do you decide what is the right thing to do, and how do you draw on yourself and come up with your own personal attributes that will help you do that. I'll give you an example. Suppose that you're a CIO or an IT executive and your customers just think that you're awful, and so customer service is very important. But if you're in IT, you're probably an introvert, or maybe you're a network engineer and say, oh, I hate customers. You don't want to talk to them. So if you're going to deal with that problem with customer service, then you've got to deal with yourself. You've got to deal with how do you transform yourself before you transform the organization. Organizational transformation starts with individual transformation, and how do you do it? And so one line of business is about that. The second line of business is about what is the right thing to do from a technology perspective, looking at the technology bag of tricks, so to speak. And you have social media, you have cloud computing, virtualization, and data analytics, all of the things that are coming now continue to come through innovation to help us jumpstart into a better place, to transform from a current state to a future state. And then finally, the final line of business is about overseeing the implementation. I think that one reason why transformations fail is because you say, okay, this is what I want to do, and that's it. When we come up with a strategy, that strategy has to be somewhat like we do with agile system development, agile programming. You do a quick prototype, you see how that goes, and then make some course corrections, and then you do another sprint to see how that goes. So you might try a strategy, and maybe within the context of the culture that you're in, you might have to modify it a bit, and then you make another sprint, and then within the context of the culture, maybe you make another modification. And so that requires diligent program management and oversight. It requires flexibility and a way to measure your progress as you're going along. And so I view the need to look at the entire life cycle of transformation, from the individual leader to the senior leadership team, to what are the solutions that are available to innovate through, and then finally, how are you going to execute this grand plan and know that it's working correctly.
All right, so three lines of business, as you call it, things that you've experienced during your career in government. I'm sure you've seen all of them kind of come to pass. Let's talk about some of those at NASA. When you look back at your time in NASA, obviously NASA's, from what I've heard, is a great place to work. You know, there's a lot of fascinating. Let's talk about what your time at NASA, and what are you most proud of during that stay?
One of the things that, you know, I wanted to do when I first came into the role of the agency CIO was to transform the NASA IT program into the best IT program in government. And I think, you know, people have heard this little joke, you know, working for NASA, I've got to talk about the best IT program in the universe because we're NASA, right? Inside of NASA, the CIO's office was not really highly thought of. And outside of NASA, I don't think that people really heard of anything going on in IT, not too much anyway. And the IT people didn't really get out much. We didn't exchange information. We didn't go to technical conferences to learn what other people were doing. And we sort of stopped learning from an external perspective because we're very internally focused. And in order to be the best in government, at least, you've got to know what your competitors are doing, what's going on out there, and what does best look like. And I think that I feel good because I think that during the 3.5 years that I've been there, I think that the NASA IT program has, in my opinion, gotten that reputation, and well-deserved, because they're a group of amazing men and women that work for the NASA IT organization. And I leave feeling very good about that transformation.
When you look at the transformation, it's more than just obviously going to conferences and showing up. It's things you're doing, like the I3P project, I think, is a good example. Some of the things you guys are doing around social media, you're ahead of the game with things like Facebook. And even though it may not have worked out like you wanted it to, it was still an idea that got people talking and thinking. Are those the things that kind of you're pointing to?
Yeah, and so, you know, if I could talk a little bit about Facebook. When you talk about innovation, people think that, oh, well, if it's successful, then innovation is good. But you've got to learn from things that don't work so well. And Facebook, I think, was a success because we learned so much from it. We learned about how to use social media. We learned about the barriers and experienced firsthand some of the things that we have concerns about, what to do and not do, and things like that. So I think it was extremely successful in helping us overcome the resistance to using Facebook and things like that. And I think that in a lot of the areas of innovation, sometimes they're very risky. And a lot of us in government are very risk averse. It's very difficult to take risks in government. You're often not rewarded for the things that don't go right. And in innovation, most things don't go right. So yeah, we did that. We did Nebula. And Nebula, as many folks know, is now turned over to the open source community, and it's essentially out there as OpenStack, which is definitely caught on in industry and definitely there. I got a lot of external and internal resistance to developing Nebula, and I got a lot of resistance about turning Nebula over to the open source community as OpenStack. But I believe that doing things like that is fundamentally what NASA's been doing for years, developing technology. And once we learn from it or determine how NASA can use it, the commercialization of the technology is best done by commercial and not by the government, not by NASA. So the evolution of Nebula to what is now OpenStack, to me, it was really a great thing for IT, and it was a great thing for NASA.
And just briefly, Nebula was the first really community cloud in many respects. Is it a public cloud?
It's a hybrid cloud, private, and allows you to run in a very secure kind of way and yet take advantage of the scalable, flexible, on-demand features of cloud that you would want to do it. So if you are concerned about you want your capabilities to be provisioned on-premise and you don't really want to go to another provider, then OpenStack gives you the foundation of doing it. So that's why you see a lot of major integrators jumping into it, looking at OpenStack, Rackspace is there, IBM, I think most recently, and organizations like that, because this is one of the great things about OpenStack, that you can do that. A lot of people are very concerned about cloud computing because I don't have control anymore, I don't know what's going to run. But if you are doing a private or a hybrid, then you're able to have more control over that. Now you see a lot of public cloud offerings learning about and providing some of these capabilities to address some of the security issues, and we're converging somewhere. I'm not sure where, but it's a very fascinating thing to watch from a technical innovation perspective.
All right, let's take a quick break. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Linda Cureton, the retired NASA CIO and CEO and founder of Muse Technologies.
I can't believe it. I lost my house, my wife, my family, and my job. Everything.
If you or someone you know has tried but can't stop gambling, you should know that problem gambling could be an addiction.
While gambling is entertainment for some people, for over 150,000 people in Maryland, it's a devastating medical condition.
Are you at risk? Call the Maryland Center on Problem Gambling Helpline, 1-800-GAMBLER, or go to mdproblemgambling.com. We can help.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Linda Cureton, the former NASA CIO and now CEO and founder of Muse Technologies. Before break, we're talking about what you're most proud of at NASA. Now we're going to talk about what maybe you wish you spend a little bit more time on at NASA. There's a lot of projects, a lot of successes. What areas do you say, you know, if I only had another hour in my day, another couple hours in my week to really focus on this, whatever issue it is, what would you point to?
One of the things I would really wish that I had time to spend, you know, I could do maybe a little bit longer on, is the I3P transformation. And especially, there were a set of 5 contracts that they were absolutely successful, saved a lot of money, met the stated goals. But the desktop contract was probably the one that everybody feels and they see and they touch. And one of the things that I3P did was that we went from Odin to ACES. And people look at that as, oh, you went from one contract to another. But really, Odin was a master contract, and there were 10 contracts, one contract at each center. And the ACES contract was one contract. So we basically went from 10 contracts to one, to 10 centers to one agency perspective, 10 countries or 10 companies, as independent as and autonomous as some centers can be. It was a major transition in a completely different way of operating. And at the same time, we insourced our help desk. And I say insource because we insourced it to do it ourselves, but we did it through a shared service type arrangement. So we did shared services and used the help desk to provision those shared services, and that was done by NASA's Shared Service Center. And those were tremendously aggressive and huge. And in changes like that, sometimes the customer satisfaction will tank a bit. And then it will come back up. And where we were is we were used to be red on everything. You know, everything's off for every metric you could think of. I was glad that I left and everything was green. But what I felt we really need to do is get beyond green and get to great. And I wish that I had more time to get there. I wish more that I had more time to spend on that because I think that the IT organization is definitely headed in that direction, and I hope that the next NASA CIO keeps that momentum going.
And we will talk about that next NASA CIO, whoever he or she may be, in a minute or two. Let me move over to more broadly. You spent, obviously, 34 years in government. How much has technology changed? How much has the management oversight of technology changed over the last, you know, 30-plus years?
At least from a government perspective, one of the big changes that I've seen comes from the fact that you don't see government employees actually doing the nuts and bolts of things too much. With our staff being augmented by contractors or outsourced to contractors, the role of the government IT manager has changed significantly. When I first started, I was programming. I had to roll up my sleeves and do understand hexadecimal and program and IBM assembler, be able to read dumps and debug things. I had to be able to do that, and my peers did that too. It transformed to then getting IBM to do it, or you're outsourced to an integrator like Lockheed Martin, and they're doing the work, and then you're overseeing that. And that's the biggest shift that I see now, and it affects what the workforce looks like. It takes a lot of experience, and it takes a seasoned person to manage and oversee that from a sourcing perspective. And it's not necessarily a place where a fresh out coming from college, they want to come in and they want to get their hands on stuff. And it gives the government a tremendous challenge in trying to attract young people to come in who want to do things. When they come in, they find, well, a contractor is really doing all the things. So that's the biggest shift that I've seen.
Let me go back to one thing you said. You said that the government went from doing stuff to managing stuff. Is that a good change in your opinion, or did it go too far and now the pendulum is slowly coming back, or is it not coming back fast enough?
I think it went too far, actually, and we tried to swing the pendulum back early in the administration with the multi-sector workforce pilots, to look at insourcing some things that we had outsourced. But really, when you look at the demands on government budgets right now, there's not a lot of budget for FTEs. There you just can't hire people. You can't pay them what they could get paid if they worked in the private sector, because people already think government people are get paid too much, and you got too much of this and too much with that. But actually, when you compare it to their peers, they're not getting paid too much. They're getting paid less. So you're not able to, the government, I don't think the government is able to be competitive about hiring people and retaining them and keeping that happening. And then training them in order to keep them up to date on the technology that they need to be at. So to insource it, to bring things back, bring the pendulum back, yeah, that's great, but can we afford to do that? And let's not, you know, do it in a halfway kind of way. Let's do it full or just not do it at all. So I think attempts to bring it back have been, you know, not fully resourced. It's not been practical. The budget just doesn't lend itself to do that. So I don't know what to say, but I think that it's something that needs to be addressed.
I think a lot of people would actually agree with you, but now you're able to say it. Almost CIOs are more conservative in their viewpoints. Unfortunately, we are almost out of time. This is always a fascinating conversation with you. It always seems to go by so quickly. So let's talk about advice for current, future CIOs, for the next CIO at NASA. What would you tell them? What were some of the words of wisdom you'd give them?
For the next CIO at NASA, I would say don't think you know NASA from looking from the outside in. You know, people have a more of a idealized perspective. Oh, you've got the latest technology and you're doing these things, but the NASA infrastructure needs to be modernized. And just like any other federal agency, the budgets to do that, you know, just aren't there. And a lot of people, when they come in, they're just surprised that the infrastructure to provision some of the services that we need to provision centrally just aren't there. And that's always a shock, I think, when coming in. The next kind of thing, real quick, for the NASA CIO is be prepared to provide IT services to the most brilliant minds on the planet that know more about technology than you do. They build computers. They send them up in low Earth orbit. They do all these things, and you have to be humble about delivering services to those people. To the federal CIO in general, one of the things that I would say that the technology isn't the biggest problem. It's IT governance, and a lot of the challenges that federal CIOs have is in the area of governance. And where I think that the strategy in the current administration could help is to realize that IT governance is not a CIO's problem to solve. It's the agency head, it's the department head, it's the administrators, the secretaries, the deputy secretaries. It's their problem to solve. And what often happens is that it kind of gets relegated to the CIO that's not empowered to do anything about IT governance, yet is held accountable for delivering solutions, for example, security, where IT governance is just insufficient in order to deliver secure infrastructures. So I would say start with governance because that's the hardest problem. Technology is not a silver bullet. It's going to be about people, it's about culture, and it's about relationships. Technology is the easy part. Focus on that hard part and your own leadership that's required in order to transform your agency into where it needs to be.
Excellent advice. 34 years in government. Linda Cureton was our special guest today on Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. Linda is many people know you as the former, now retired NASA CIO and now CEO and founder of Muse Technologies. Linda, thank you for all your time, all your service to the government, all your service to the country, and of course, good luck with your new venture.
Thanks, Jason.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
Something that has not been sequestered are the Greater Washington Government Contractor Awards. Now in their 11th year, the awards honor the leadership, innovation, and commitment to excellence of the region's government contracting sector. In today's tough environment, boost your visibility by nominating your company or executive leader for one of these distinguished recognitions presented before an audience of 1,000 business and government leaders. Learn more and apply today at govconawards.com.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
Iris Cooper is Executive Director of the Office of Acquisition Operations at Veterans Affairs.
Just because we are not sequestered doesn't mean we shouldn't be fiscally responsible. Our emphasis is definitely on strategic sourcing. I'm responsible for the Strategic Acquisition Center in Stafford, where we are looking at how do we leverage our spend for medical commodities and services or enterprise-wide services.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.